Yes. Such a funny little. I don't know. He likes it very much. Do you think it's Have you ever thought of doing anything else besides writing? Writing's just been your whole life, being a newspaper man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's all I've ever done.
What interests you about that?
About writing?
Mm-hmm. And being a newspaper person.
Oh, I just like to impart the things that I hear and,
mm-hmm.
and to other people for their enjoyment and information and so on. I guess that's just what it takes.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
You never considered doing anything else, or, no? That's good. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't seem to fit in anything else.
I think that's why most of us do what we do.
Sure.
We fit in. Mm-hmm.
I'd make a lousy artist.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't even write legibly longhand. I always type.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a word processor now.
Oh boy, that's what I want very much.
Well, Jamie, unknown to me, had been shopping around for one for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
So here, several months ago, she came home and said, come on out and help me unload some boxes. It was a Macintosh,
mm-hmm.
a computer. That's of the Apple family,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh. Other people like them to draw pictures with, mm-hmm. and all that, but I told her, I looked at the instructions, it'd take about 6 months to go through that. And I said, look, when you get to the point of reading this, and you can show me how to put words, letters and words and punctuation and so on this thing, then call me and I'll be right there.
So you're not using it?
What?
You're not using it?
No, I just all I want it for is writing.
Mm-hmm. That's all I want.
I don't care about drawing pictures of people and all that with it. Because they're no good anyway, and it's mechanical. You don't, nothing arty about it. So anyway, I learned how to set it up and to transfer it onto the printer,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So all the stuff I do now for the News Miner, for example, is done on my word processor.
I bet it's a lot faster and easier.
Mm-hmm. And I think I could sit down at one of their terminals down there in the office,
mm-hmm.
and probably make out with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can go back and correct and everything. And it's really nice. You can transfer a whole paragraph to another place.
Yeah, this is what I really need, is something like
well,
that.
Well, these things cost over $3,000.
Yeah,
And, you know, you can... when they get them in, I've got a thing ordered, or Janie has, so that I can just dial the office number and send it in right over the telephone line. And that's the way Jimmy Bedford's doing it now, too.
Yeah,
he's got an Osborne.
I'm thinking of getting a little K-Pro. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Osborne's advantages are that they're portable. And I just sort of should look at that, because I'm going to be away this winter a little.
Yeah, you better look around at several, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, be good to talk to Jamie. She's an authority on what is what. And
she is, say, okay, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
What'll it do, what it will do and what it won't do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she has some experience in being in the office, too.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, they're going to change all theirs. They're going to get new ones,
mm-hmm.
new terminals. Mm-hmm. See, they can just hit a key and get Baltimore like that and mm-hmm. tell you exactly what mm-hmm. you'll get when you're 62 or 65.
Gee, I should ask her, because I don't know if I'm getting anything. John,
well, yeah, but then even if you weren't under covered employment, you'd automatically get half as much as your husband gets.
Oh, I see.
Well, look at now. My brother-in-law in Olympia retired from the state. He was chief of game management.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets about, 800 and something a month from Social Security, plus a $20,000 pension from the state. Well, she gets half of what, as much as he gets from Social Security.
Hmm.
Well, you know, it's about 400 a month.
That makes a difference.
And I get $1 over 900. From Social Security. And I used to bitch about it, you know, of having to kick in all that money and everything, but I don't anymore.
I guess most of us are like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn a lot as you go through life. Any other things in life that you feel differently about now than you felt when you were younger?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, gee whiz. Let's see, that's been ever since 1937 I've paid into that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. During the war, you worked in Washington then?
Mm-hmm.
Was that war related, or?
What?
Was that related to the Second World War, or?
Well, not directly, because I was covering business and financial news, and I worked out of a little press room over in the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was right across the street from the White House, I had the job of Roosevelt used to have two press conferences every week, one for afternoon, one for morning paper.
So
I filled in, backed up Merriman Smith,
mm-hmm.
who was the regular chief White House correspondent.
Oh, that's exciting, yeah.
And in those days, radio people couldn't mm-hmm. ask a question of the president.
Oh, only press people.
The newspaper guy just blanked them out. If they started to ask a question, they were immediately interrupted, and Roosevelt wouldn't pay attention to them.
But he liked the newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And when I first went there, what they do, they send you around, like when secretaries are having a press conference, so you can meet each secretary, department secretary, and when he took me over to the White House for a press conference, we waited until it was over with, and then he took me by the desk and introduced me to Roosevelt. And Roosevelt was there with his long cigarette holder and package of Camels laying here, and so he said, "And where are you from? What part of the country?" He gave me about 10 minutes, I guess. And Smitty was having a fit because he had to get out and dictate his story. But he didn't want to run out, you know. So he said that he gave me more time than he ever gave any other reporter. And so I told him, you know, Seattle area and so on. He says, "Do you know John Charles Gregory?" I said, "Yeah, he's my father." He was my father. And he said, "Well, you know what? I once got a fine letter," he said, "in Albany, and I was running for president the first time. I got a real nice, heartening letter from John Charles Gregory." And he said, "I'm glad to meet his son." And he reached across and shook my hand, you know. Said, "You know what? That letter's a treasure in our family. My sister Joy has got the original, and the rest of the family have copies of it. I haven't got one, though, that I could get it."
Hmm.
But yeah, Roosevelt was a great guy. Jeez, he sure had a mind. And I always enjoyed going over there, and I remember the day that Smitty, we called him, Merriman Smith, who later committed suicide about 10 years ago. Nobody ever knew why. Anyway, a photographer had a stepladder up in the Oval Office. for the press conference to take pictures. So when Smitty started to make the big rush, as it usually was, you know, and then it would break up, you'd rush for the phone. He tripped over the stepladder, and he hit on the shoulder, and it damaged his shoulder and everything. Everything was in an uproar, and they got an ambulance in and everything, and then I had to fill in. I had to get on the phone. And Roosevelt, after they had the guy in the hospital and into bed and everything, Roosevelt called a car, and Roosevelt personally went up there, and they wheeled him in his wheelchair to visit Smitty and make sure for himself that Smitty was going to recover. But you know, it's thoughtful things that nobody hears about those things.
Yeah, important things for people to know.
What?
These are important things for people to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Just put it down there. It's okay. You know, this, when I come to write this, I'm going to be writing it in the first person, I'm going to try. And so if you could think of anything that you want to think of that you'd like to say to people from yourself, you know.
Gosh. I don't offhand. Maybe I'll think of something, and if I do, I'll put it down.
Okay. Well, we have one more taping session to do, okay?
Oh,
that's
yeah?
Is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
Maybe we can hear more about Roosevelt or going on through there. Maybe you'll remember other incidents that happened over the years.
I remember when Roosevelt died, I'd gone over to the office in the National Press Building, and I was working at a desk, and the desk runs the whole news service, you know. Somebody yelled, "Roosevelt dead." And boy, it went right on the A-wire right now, "FDR died."
Mm-hmm.
That's a flash.
Mm-hmm.
It takes something like that to be a flash. So, God, everybody ran up to the desk, you know, here. And we had a news editor named Jay Franzen, and he was a crackerjack with dictation.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood right there by the operator of the A-wire, and he started out Washington, a bulletin first lead, see, that would be on top of the flash. Warm Springs, Georgia. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt died today, period, paragraph, and so on. He,
mm-hmm.
he just kept that going until Merriman Smith could get through on the telephone with details
mm-hmm.
from Warm Springs, where Roosevelt was taking a little spring vacation. And boy, that was really something, just electrifying, you know.
Well, everybody knew he was going to die, didn't they? I mean, he was very ill.
No, he wasn't ill at the time. Mm-mm. And no different than he had been.
Yeah, I mean, he had cancer, didn't he? And
what?
Didn't he have cancer and he was slowly dying anyway?
Well, yeah, I suppose, but it wasn't expected.
It wasn't expected.
So it was a real shaking experience for the whole nation and the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of a war.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the war and...
Did you ever get to meet Truman then?
Oh, yeah, geez, he was a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was at the, Smitty was with Truman on the cruiser Houston bound for Potsdam.
Oh, nice.
Right after the surrender of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going there for this big conference, and here this story came down. I was sitting there in, reading a magazine or something there in the White House press room, and this handout came in from the press secretary's office. That was Steve Early in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So it was on the bombing of Hiroshima, and we called it Hiroshima at the time.
We thought, yeah.
And I read down one page and I started on the next and it said with a force of 20,000 tons of TNT, and then I knew that it was the atomic bomb. And God, I got on the phone, it was a flash, see. I said, Japan City atomized. And God, it was electrifying, you know. Everybody made the rush for there when they yelled that flash in the office. And God, from then on, oh, geez, it was maddening, you know, going into all this. And our man, who had been out for the demonstration of this thing, the test in Alamogordo, New Mexico, he quick-like got permission to get into the office safe. He had already written the story about this bomb, but he didn't know it was going to go to Hiroshima or where. But he wrote his experience out there as they set off this bomb and all that stuff, and they brought that out. They had it on the wire like nothing. They released the censorship on it, see. It was all highly secret. There wasn't a person in the office that knew where this guy had gone or what it was all about. That's how sensitive it was. So, and then when he came back, nobody could be in the room with him when he was writing the story, and he had to take all of his notes and everything like that to a certain person in the White House, and they call it not shaved, but...
I know, they give him a little sticker, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And so there was no way of anything getting out that way. So,
Shredded,
yeah, that's the word, yeah. So then, let's see. But just before that, when Truman was still in town, before he went to Potsdam on a cruiser Houston, we were expecting the end of the war in Europe. And so we had to have the White House staffed at all times. So I took this midnight to 8 a.m. on Sunday. We had the morning papers in New York and Washington. I was lying back on a leather couch out in the lobby part and reading the papers, and this White House cop, lieutenant, an older guy, came over and started talking to me, and he says, have you had a good look around the White House yet? I said, well, no. I said, just, you know, the press room and things like that. Come on, take a walk. So I didn't think anything of it. We went upstairs and we saw boxes of books that they had packed for Elmer to take to Hyde Park and things like that, and I picked up one or two of them and looked at them. They were all autographed to Franklin, my friend Franklin, and like that, you know. And the last thing we did, we went down in the East Executive Avenue side of the White House, which would be just across the street from the Treasury. Went down in there, and there'd been all kinds of reports about that thing down there, what it was, a bomb-proof shelter, and how it was fancied up for Roosevelt and all that. We got down there, and all it was a concrete basement, and here's a little room with a bathroom, just a tiny little room, room enough for a stool and a bathtub, and a wash basin, and that was all. There were signs about the well, a Liberty loan, you know, or not. It wasn't then a Victory loan they were talking about. And everything was covered with dust. And then there was a larger room out there that was an office and a small bedroom. And the bed didn't even have any bedding on it. With a mattress and a spring and so on. That was Roosevelt. So it wasn't all that fancy business that the opposition press was telling the people that their money was getting spent for. Mm-hmm. Roosevelt just laughed his head off about that, you know. He, well, I guess he heard it, you know, before he died. So then we came back up and came in by the Rose Garden and into the swimming pool. And here are a set of Roosevelt shorts laying in this rub-down room and that kind of stuff. But I was getting more and more concerned with it, see. I'm not supposed to be here. Of course, I had pool clearance. But still, he just didn't do that. So then he took me in to this room, and I recognized it, bang, like that, what it was, communications room. Most highly sensitive spot in the whole world. And I saw what it was, and I said, hey, I'm not interested in this at all. So he got outside, and he said, well, what's the matter? And I said, well, damn it, it turned out that he thought I was a Secret Service man.
Oh, is that right?
So yeah. He turned me loose by the Rose Garden and told me how to get back up to the thing, the lobby.
Oh, but he was in there.
So the next morning, Joe Mahoney called me at home, got me out of bed about 10 o'clock.
With Joe Mahoney?
He was then the chief of the Secret Service, and I knew him very well. His office was in the Treasury Building. Mm-hmm. Used to sit there and shoot the bull by the hour. So he says, hey, Albert, I hear you got a tour of the White House last night. I said, yeah, I did. And I said, I was jittery about it at the very end. And he said, well, he said, that could have been anybody, but as long as it was you, there's no security broken, we know that. But he said, this guy's through. He had 30 years in anyway, and so they retired him. And, they had hearings and everything else, and I had to go to them and explain things, and I felt badly for the guy,
oh,
you know.
Yeah,
but I wasn't about to do any lying either. They'd had me right over the barrel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you can't buy into
it. I kept telling them, you know, that I'm so sorry for this man. And, but since I wasn't, I'd been cleared and everything in security, well, they decided to just retire him, mm-hmm. and he wouldn't be hurt at all for that. It wouldn't go on his record.
When you're saying that things that just sort of, you know, flash things going across the nation, instances that you felt electrified the public, can you think, excuse me, of any comparable incidents? I know they're not quite as dynamic or really comparable, but any incidents in Alaska that you felt were, over the years, were a high newsworthy events, or that you felt were very, very memorable experiences?
Offhand, no. I remember when John Kennedy was killed, mm-hmm. and it came in as a flash. I was in Ketchikan, and between you and me, no farther, the publisher's wife, who was very anti-demo, and she came in, she heard the bells, and she came into my office. And I looked up at her and said, Pat, John Kennedy has been assassinated. She said, oh. Walked over to take a look at it. She said, well, we didn't need him, but I don't think they should have killed him. wasn't him. Jesus. I got up, and I remember I slapped that desk so hard I hurt my hand. I said, Pat, how in the hell can you act like that? Here we are, a nation that's on the verge of catastrophe, mm-hmm. with a bunch of freaks running around shooting up the place, mm-hmm. and then you take that attitude about it. No, just shook her head, and you know what? She didn't want to hold the paper for the rest of the story at all. She wanted to go right to press, and without, she said, tomorrow's another day, we can carry the story then. I said, that's not the way it's going to be, Patricia. We're going to hold the paper and get this full story. Yes, as much as we can get of it. With that, I got on the wire and I called Seattle, AP, and so on to hurry things along, you know. God.
Human nature is always very surprising, isn't it?
What?
Human nature is always very surprising.
It sure is.
Can you recall other instances, both in a positive and negative sense, where you've been surprised?
Oh, no. Offhand, not. I can't.
Well,
things will come to my mind.
They will come to your mind, and this is all.
I hope I haven't bored you.
You never bore me. In fact, I just